A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, welcome to The Guinea Pig. I'm Dr. Mariam Zamani, an oculoplastic surgeon and aesthetic doctor.
And I'm Fiona Golfer, a writer and journalist. I'm no stranger to a cosmetic procedure, and I'm willing to try pretty much anything.
Which is why I'm here, to make sure Fiona and anyone else that's out there considering a treatment to help make a better informed decision safely and to try and collect as much information as they can.
Every fortnight, this podcast comes to you from Mariam's clinic in Chelsea. If you're looking for an honest, no-holds-barred approach to invasive and non-invasive cosmetic surgery,
then the Guinea Pig is here to help you. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the clinic for another episode of the Guinea Pig.
Hi. The theme of today's episode is, well, it was going to be incredibly timely, as we're talking about anesthetics, and I was due to have one this morning. In fact, I was worried that I was going to be a bit thick-headed, but so stupid am I that I went to the wrong hospital this morning, so I'm not actually recovering from being anesthetized. I'm recovering from walking the streets aimlessly and wondering why I'm so stupid, but...
We'd like to welcome Dr. Alex Oliver. He is a consultant anesthetist, and we thought it would be important to discuss all things anesthesia. It's often a gray area in the world of procedures, and it's nice to have a little light shed on it. So thank you very much. Welcome, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
So just a few first initial questions. There's different kinds of anesthesia. Can you tell us what the difference is between a general, a twilight, and a local anesthetic? Do you know, Fee?
I think I do, actually. Thank you, Maria.
Okay.
I think I do.
Well, the first place to start, I think, is that, and lots of people get confused about this, is there are lots of different types of general anesthesia, and there are probably 1,000 cocktails of different types of general anesthesia that you could have. But the traditional one that most people remember or think about is the gas anesthesia, which is you go to sleep and then you're kept asleep by constantly breathing in and breathing out anesthetic gas, which keeps you unconscious. Those gases go back a long time, probably right since the beginning of anesthesia 150 years ago. And nowadays we've come up with newer drugs, which are intravenous, which have much nicer side effect profiles and recovery profiles, and are generally better for you in all ways.
And what about a twilight?
So the twilight sort of anesthesia sedation people talk about is actually just sedation. And sedation means that you are put into a state of semi-unconsciousness, if you want to talk about it like that, where you are not completely unconscious, you're not necessarily completely unaware of what's going on around you, but you should not mind. And you will probably remember snippets of things that went on, but you won't mind, and you probably won't remember very much, to be honest. But that is not full general anesthesia. General anesthesia gets rid of all your reflexes, your voluntary reflexes, and some of your involuntary reflexes. So it's a more dangerous state to be in, some people think. Although I would also argue doing good sedation, twilight sedation, if you like, is actually sometimes harder to achieve, to make sure people are comfortable, but also unaware of most of things that are going on that they don't mind.
What are the side effects? So this is the one thing that people are always worried about. They think always sedation is a better anesthetic because they're not fully asleep and that they will be able to recuperate faster and better. Having said that, you do a lot of my own cases and my patients snap out of it really quite quickly, and it's as if 2 hours later they've, you know, had a local essentially. So the effect of the anesthetic wearing off is really important. And is there anything that patients should ask for when they speak to their anesthetist? Because oftentimes they don't see them until the day of the procedure.
I mean, bear in mind, a lot of what I will say is probably still only opinion-based, and the evidence is still emerging, and it's still coming forth as we're talking. But when people talk about sedation, they're probably comparing it to the old days of anesthesia, where you were given the sledgehammer anesthetic gases that would knock you out and make you very, very unconscious, and make you recover for a lot longer afterwards, because you're constantly having to breathe out those drugs and they take a lot longer to get rid of. Nowadays, with the intravenous agents, they're fast onset and very fast offset. And also, they're much more closely monitored during the anesthetic because all the software in the intravenous pumps is cleverly contrived so that we know exactly how much we're giving you and how long it's going to take for it to go away. We also are using much more complicated monitoring methods now, with brain monitoring, which has become much more fashionable since intravenous anesthesia came in, because people want to be sure that even though the computer is telling us the dose that we're giving, we want to make sure it's the right amount of dose, or you want to have a clinical effects monitor like a brain monitor to tell us that those patients are properly asleep. The advantage of the brain monitor is that it makes us not make people too asleep either, which often was the case, I imagine, with the gas anesthetics.
Too deep, basically.
Too deep.
Interesting.
Which is why you wake up feeling that you've been hit with a sledgehammer.
By a sledgehammer, yes.
So when I had my, because there's nothing I like more than talking about my own medical conditions, but when I had, I could go through about four anesthetics that I've had in the last year, generals, so it's incredible. But the last one I had was an endoscopy because I've got stomach ulcers, you'll be happy to hear. And
we're not happy to hear.
I remember being given I was told it was a very light anesthetic, but I have no memory of what went on. I remember waking up at the end. I got up from the table. I actually went to the airport and got on a plane and went to do a work thing. But I wondered, because I felt quite sort of generally in life exhausted after that. And what is the sort of the long-term effect? How long does it really take to get over an anesthetic?
That's, again, difficult to answer without knowing exactly what you were given, because most of the time, in my experience, and I do a lot of endoscopy sedation every week, every Wednesday.
Maybe it was you who...
No. Maybe it was. I doubt it, because you were snapped out of it. Because exactly. The sedation I give for that, the surgeon's talking to the patient 20 minutes later and they're going home within an hour.
Yes,
and they're
helpless.
Feeling great. And the next time they come in, they say, I want exactly the same thing
so
again.
So there is no kind of hangover from that kind
depends
of
depends what the drug is that you were given and the way you were giving it and the adjuncts to that drug that were given. So for instance, you might have been given an intravenous anesthetic drug, which is good. May have been given too much of it, which may have made you go too deep, and you may have been given painkillers on top of that, which may have had the drowsy effect and lasted for a while afterwards.
What puts you at increased risk of a general anesthetic? So what are the things that your doctor needs to know about? Because oftentimes people think, for instance, oh, I'm just having an eye case. My doctor doesn't need to know that I'm doing this and this.
Because they think it's a simple procedure.
They think it's a simple procedure.
So every anesthetic has an effect on your cardiovascular and respiratory system. So if there's any illnesses at all, or any complications you've had in the past to any procedures or any medications you're on particularly, we need to know about it. Because you may think it's a very small and easy procedure, but the anesthetic may actually be far more complicated than you think.
And why is it, I know the answer, but why is it that you have to avoid eating and drinking after a certain period of time? And why is it so important to let the staff know if you have done so when you're having an anesthetic?
So for instance, if you eat or drink anything milky, it may take your stomach 6 hours to properly empty that material. And when you have a proper anesthetic, not a twilight sedation, you lose all your reflexes. So if something comes up into your throat, you won't cough and gag when it tries to go down the wrong way. And then it will go down the wrong way and go into your lungs, and then it's bad news. and difficult to look after. That's why it's 6 hours for solids or milky substances and 2 hours for clear fluids.
Because I was thrilled the last time I had this procedure, they told me I could have my black coffee in the morning, which I was very happy to hear, because I was always thinking that you can't eat or drink for six hours. Is it true that it can affect your memory, and anaesthetic can affect your memory? Because I've got to blame it on something. I've got no memory at all. I mean, literally, it's a miracle I know my own name.
There is a lot of research going on at the moment, and there's been a recent paper about brain monitoring as well, that we're trying to detect what it is that causes people, and it's generally speaking more elderly people,
that have
delirium episodes or loss of memory afterwards, and we're trying to find out exactly what it is that causes that. My personal experience, and there are papers published about this, that there's definitely more morbidity, so sickness, associated, and this was shown in two papers from Canada actually, that the deeper you are under anaesthetic, the more profound effect it has on you. And that's because we know anaesthetics are dirty drugs. We know what their side effects are, but we also don't know what some of the other side effects are. I mean, we think they probably have an effect on the immune system and the stress response system, etc. So actually, they probably affect memory and brain function in other ways.
What is the stress response system?
So, for instance, if you're having really, really major surgery, your body is going to have an inflammatory stress response because its cells are all being damaged to quite a marked degree. And those cells will undergo an inflammatory response. And they'll all be working very much harder to repair themselves afterwards. And there's all sorts of immune systems that come into play that we don't properly even understand yet. And we know that anaesthetic drugs are extremely dirty. So they affect lots of systems. You know, that's why we have to know about your cardiovascular system and your respiratory system, because we know that's all going to be affected in a detrimental way by the anaesthetic that we give. So if the stress response is affected, maybe the brain's affected in other ways. So that's why with this EEG monitoring and brain monitoring, EEG means electroencephalograph, which is the brain function of it, basically. If that is monitored and we don't make you too deep, we're giving you just the right amount of anaesthetic. There's no common sense in giving you too much, because we're giving you too much of something that's
a filthy drug. And in the old days, there was no way of gauging that.
No. And brain monitoring is only really coming into this country, I would say, in the last 5-10 years, it's starting to take some ground. It's been more widely used in Europe and the States and Australia before that, but now it's starting to gain some ground in this country. People are starting to understand it better and its implications.
So how can you improve the recovery time from having a general anaesthetic? So there are some people who, for instance, you know, have never taken much medication or have very clean living, and so sometimes they can be a little bit more impacted, or there are just little people, lots of different reasons why you can be affected more. So is there anything that can be done after surgery to help clear those drugs from the body?
Firstly, I think it depends on the surgery. So let's say you're having some sort of minor surgery, like you might have here, and you're going to go home the same day. Nothing too much should make a massive impact on that, apart from making sure the anaesthetic is the right amount, the right depth, and you're not given way too much of heavy dose painkillers, for instance, that you probably won't need. Then your wake-up profile should be good. If you then want a further increase in your wake-up and recovery profile, staying well hydrated as soon as you can, mobilizing as soon as you can, and basically getting up and get going as soon as you can helps, definitely. But mobilization
is a key
hydration.
Then. And the same before surgery, to get yourself in optimal condition before.
The fitter you are, the better you will do with any type of surgery.
Mariam and I are staring at each other in a, see, kind of a way.
No, but you know, actually, interestingly enough, so about a year and a half, or maybe 2 years ago now, my mother had bunion surgery in the States. And it was totally unremarkable. Everything went as planned. She had done both feet at the same time. And a few months later, soon after they had come back from a long-haul flight to, I believe they were in Japan and Asia, my mother came back and they went to dinner, my father and another couple. And at 7:30 in the evening, my mother started cutting her steak with a spoon. And she was not, just, you know, she was speaking normally, and then from 1 minute to the next, she fell asleep. Of course, everybody thought it was a stroke, some sort of, you know, event happened. She was taken, scanned. Everything was fine. Nothing happened. A few weeks later, they go and have breakfast, my mother and my father. And my mother, again, starts to, you know, she had a little bit of porridge and she took it with a knife instead of with a spoon, but having a normal conversation. And, you know, my father was like, oh, what is going on? My parents are both doctors. Again, she had a complete workup. And the only thing they could possibly... I felt like they blamed it on the anesthesia because that's the only thing they could have. But it never happened again.
Common to blame it. Common to blame it.
So it never happened again. Those were the two incidences. Very scary.
And how long after the anesthetic was the first incident?
At least, you know, they went on a trip, so it couldn't have been too soon because when you have bunion surgery, you can't walk. At least 6 weeks before, if not.
So, I mean.
It would have definitely cleared the body by then,
yes.
I imagine.
Even probably 6 hours.
6 hours.
It would have probably been completely out.
Is that how long it takes? Most anesthetics, about 6 hours.
The intravenous anesthetics.
Yes.
Will be out within an hour, probably.
Really?
Probably less, depending on what surgery you're having. And the other thing that...
So in theory, you could have an operation in the morning, intravenous anesthetic, and be at your desk.
I frequently have patients that are walking out after an hour.
Yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And then, but not to ride, you know, drive a car or
no,
do any...
we still aren't sure about the reflex effects. So, for instance, even with a sedation where I know that my drug is going to be metabolized by you in 5 minutes, I have no idea whether your voluntary reflexes, for instance, for when you're driving a car, something will be affected.
Mine aren't great at the best of times.
The old-fashioned sedations and the old-fashioned anesthetics, we used to say at least 24 hours just to be safe. And we still do say that because we don't have any evidence to the contrary, but my actual opinion is it will be much quicker than that. And people walk out of the hospital looking absolutely normal.
So a lot of patients of mine are always concerned and worried about having a breathing tube. And I actually find that slightly reassuring being a doctor because I always say, God forbid something does happen in the event while you're being operated on, having that breathing tube is actually the first line of any treatment that would be initiated. But my patients also often ask me, does that have any impact on their physical well-being? And you know, I always refer it back, but if you could elaborate on that.
So a breathing tube that some people hear about means a tube that we sometimes, and not all the time by any means, have to put in to control people's breathing. And we do the breathing for them a lot of the time with our ventilator. The tube actually goes into the windpipe. And it's put in by all of us. You know, that's our expertise in training, to put those tubes in comfortably and make sure that they sit comfortably for the patient. Nonetheless, if you've had a breathing tube in, the proper name is an endotracheal tube, then you might have a sore throat afterwards just because of where it's gone. It's gone between your vocal cords and you're going to feel that a bit when you wake up. It shouldn't last long. When you eat and drink, that should all start going away. What I would say is that for the majority of procedures, particularly the procedures that are done here, you probably will be very unlucky to ever encounter a breathing tube. We can put something else that just sits in the mouth, called a laryngeal mask, that doesn't go anywhere near your vocal cords or your trachea, and is much more comfortable and well tolerated. And to be honest, you won't feel anything when you wake up.
So remember, I remember hearing about, for instance, what is the turning point of having too long of a procedure? So for aesthetic procedures, of course, they're not, you know, it's not having a bypass surgery. It's not essential. It's totally something, you know, non-essential, essentially. So having there was a case where a plastic surgeon in California had his patient under 8 or 9 hours of general anesthetic for a facelift, and she woke up and she jumped off a building.
Right.
And she was, you know, obviously young and relatively young and fit to be able to undergo such a lengthy procedure in the first place. But what is the cutoff between having like a quick, easy, you know, turnaround versus it then going to the side of maybe she should have had somebody with her or maybe been better, you know, educated about the risk of having
it? Really depends on the surgery. The length of time isn't the problem. It's the surgery and the amount of stress you're going to put that person's physiology under. So if you're having very superficial surgery, which might take a long time because it's very fiddly, you're not actually going to put that patient's body under much stress, that patient's physiology. And as long as the anaesthetist has all the tools at their hand to keep everything cruising and everything normal, and to make their physiological responses normal, then they should wake up and feel it's been exactly the same as having a procedure that was an hour long rather than 6 hours long.
Okay.
It shouldn't be any different. But if the surgery is more involved and more invasive, then that will have implications on how the patient feels afterwards and how they respond to afterwards, and that might require more specialized care afterwards.
You hear about, oh, well, the, you know, the risk of anesthesia is more than the actual procedure. And I always get almost offended for the anesthetist sometimes, because I think that actually if you have a good anesthetist, then, you know, it makes your surgery easier and it makes your recovery faster as well. And unfortunately, a lot of people never meet their anesthetist before
surgery. No, that's true.
And but I think you do see their files beforehand.
That's true. And I think sometimes patients have some unreal expectations that have to be countered by the anaesthetist saying, well, actually, this is what you are going to need. And yes, you are going to have to stay here overnight. Or also countered by the fact that sometimes we say, look, you're going to be fine with this. You're going to wake up and you're going to be able to go home. No trouble. And you're not going to be in lots of pain.
I think meeting your anaesthetist is incredibly important. I mean, I know that I seem to have a lot of operations, but I do think I've nearly always, as far as I can remember, met my anaesthetist, always come to see me, and we always have a very nice chat. I'm trying to remember what it was I was having done, but it could have been when I was having a tummy tuck, actually, some thousand years ago. But I remember this feeling as I was being given the anaesthetic. I remember feeling like my head hit a rock. It was really an uncomfortable feeling in the back of my neck. And recently, when I was having this endoscopy, I remember saying, do you know what, the last time I felt, and he said, oh, well, don't worry, this one's going to feel like you're having a gin and tonic. You know, and there is definitely a different way of kind of going under. And that going under, by the way, is a very delicious moment.
Yes.
For the patient. It's something that I quite
He's
enjoy.
He's stolen my line.
Yeah. That is his line, actually.
Is it the gin and tonic? Is it your line? Okay, so maybe it's kind of in your world.
I don't even know. I don't
He's
like gin and tonic.
Your line. Me either. But I do remember thinking, well, okay, gin and
tonic. I'll have to change it to a glass of champagne.
Yeah, yes, a little bubbly.
But why did my head feel like it hit a rock?
Again, 1,000 different cocktails. Depends what you're given. If you're given it too quickly, a lot of people do say that it was all so sudden and wham bam, I was out for the count.
I like a gentle slide.
Yes, and I must admit, with the intravenous computerized pumps that we use these days, it's much smoother,
right,
much gentler. You still go to sleep quickly, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. But
I remember when I had my C-section and they gave me my injection, it hit me in like 1 second. I had an emergency C-section, so they were trying to get me under very quickly. I felt very cold, very, very quickly, and shivery, and I thought I was going to throw up.
And then
I said that to my anaesthetist, who was standing right there, and he said, I'll take care of it. And 30 seconds later, it was gone. It was amazing.
Very common side effect of a spinal anaesthetic.
Yeah. It's the cold.
Yes.
My epidural didn't work when I was having my son.
But it's very scary when you actually know what's going on, when you're awake and you have an anesthetic, because then it's almost like you've lost control over part of your body.
Do you think being a doctor as well makes you more aware of sort of
I think, you know, for me, I think this episode is really important because I have a lot of people who don't know enough about anesthetic and always are very fearful. So they may even put off surgeries that they might need because they're more scared of the anesthesia than the actual procedure itself. Yeah. And I think it is really an important topic to know, like, what you're having done, who your anesthetist is. You know, I think it's also really important. For instance, I work with a very small group of anesthetists, and I think most doctors do, and I think it is important to have that sort of relationship because each type of procedure has a different best cocktail almost. And so I think if you are just whoever's there that day is doing it might not work best with the doctor or the surgeon that you're having at hand. So for me, I think the anesthetist is just as important as the surgeon in many ways. And your recovery, if you have a better recovery from everything, you're going to heal faster, you're going to feel better, and you'll have a more positive experience from your procedure.
I think what
in general.
You say is absolutely right, Maren. And I think that's why nowadays as well, there's more emphasis on pre-assessment clinics in many hospitals. And anesthetists are seeing patients sometimes weeks before they have the procedure, certainly at the hospital I work at. And that's a very positive thing, and patients feel very positive.
Because
about
you demystify,
everything, and actually you reassure them.
Yeah.
And you know, you can say, this is what to expect, this is nothing to be scared of, this is what's going to,
this is how
what you're going to feel when you wake up, what you're going to have in, what you're not going to have
in. That's so reassuring.
And they like it. And then they see you again on the day and they're reassured because they haven't just met you. And you also know what to expect. But that's
Is there a sort of age cut off when it does become more dangerous to have an anesthetic?
Age or health?
Age. I just think about when you're older, do you think it's a...
Marion's right, it's health.
Or health.
There's plenty of very fit 85-year-olds walking around who are probably easier to anesthetize than some 55-year-olds who are in a much poorer state of health. So it's really about your health.
And things like smoking and...
Smoking is definitely a no-no.
Drinking is a no-no.
And drinking lots of alcohol just before the operation. Drinking and smoking just before your anaesthetic is definitely a big no-no.
These days, would you say drinking and vaping? I don't even know what vaping does to your system. But
I have no idea.
Vaping, we're still investigating. We think it's probably going to have some effects, some negative effects. Smoking has hundreds and hundreds of negative effects, and it's not just about the nicotine.
Yeah. And fascinating.
It is fascinating.
Yeah.
I think the important thing is that anesthesia is particularly safe, I think, these days, and is becoming even more safe. And it's not something to be scared of. And I think if you ask the right questions about it, every decent anesthetist should be able to reassure you.
In my world, I know a lot of people who are, for whatever reasons, recovering alcoholics, recovering addicts, who are often very nervous about having anesthetic because how you treat people who have got drug or alcohol problems. So there is, I imagine, an opiate component to an anesthetic. How do you speak or deal with people who come to you with addiction issues?
So it's very useful to know if they are taking drugs like that, because obviously their opiate receptors are going to be more, they're going to be downgraded. So we're probably going to have to give them a lot more pain-killing parts of the anesthetic to overcome that. And that's important to know, because there are various components to anesthetic, and the classic components are the sleep anesthesia, but also a decent pain-killing element, because when you're asleep, you still feel pain. So we have to overcome that.
Otherwise,
your physiology will react to that, and you might become hypertensive, high blood pressure, high heart rate, and not react in the right way. And also, you're going to wake up in pain, which we don't want you to if we don't overcome it. And there's, you know, there are also other elements, but those are the two key important ones. So if you are taking opiate drugs, for instance, in your own spare time, and we don't know about that, we might underdose you, and then we might get funny effects from that.
Do you make that very clear when you meet your patients? I mean,
it's not something I would routinely ask them.
Yeah.
No, but to be honest, with all the monitoring we have as well, especially the brain monitoring, we can usually tell.
Oh, you can tell.
You can.
We can tell.
Even for somebody who's a recovering or hasn't touched a drug in a while.
We can tell that they're needing a lot more analgesia, pain-killing, strong opiate that we would use under anesthesia than we would expect.
Hmm. And is there a kind of post-operative, are the risks higher if you've used more?
Not necessarily. No, you will find they will probably need more anaesthetic. They will probably need much more painkilling medicines afterwards and stronger painkilling medicines afterwards, which might surprise some people if they didn't know beforehand. But again, if you have that knowledge beforehand, you can prepare for it and you can make sure they get what they need afterwards.
Fascinating.
Very interesting. All of it.
Yeah.
Going to sleep is a big job.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Alex, for coming in.
Thanks, Mara.
Fascinating. Thank you so much. Lovely to meet you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and see you next week.
And make sure you follow us on Instagram at the Guinea Pig Podcast. Plus, you can email us, or if you've got any questions for Alex or Mariam or, for some reason, me, you could email us at theguineapigpod@gmail.com. See you next week.
Thank you.
The Guinea Pig provides unbiased information to those who may be considering cosmetic surgery or even trialing a non-invasive treatment or product. We do not endorse the use of any product or procedure featured in this podcast and are not responsible for the outcome of any of the treatments featured on this podcast or damage caused in connection with any treatments or products. Should you decide to try any of the procedures, treatments or products mentioned in any episode of The Guinea Pig, you do so at your own risk. Always consult an independent and fully qualified medical professional if you are considering embarking on a medical procedure, irrespective of whether it's an invasive or non-invasive procedure.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.